Hi everyone, I'm Gary Knoll. Today we're going to talk about blueberries, as I did yesterday specifically for cancer, but today Taipei Medical University in Taiwan says they're more effective at killing cancer than radiotherapy. This is a groundbreaking study found that antioxidants in blueberries can prevent radiation-induced cancer cell growth and tumor formation in the liver. So that's a big deal. I'll discuss this in greater depth along with some other health and nutrition updates in a few moments. But I'm looking at what is fast becoming, and I mean fast becoming, the invasion of our rights, and little is being done to challenge it. Yesterday, it was the constitutional libertarian attorney, highly respected in his field at Harvard for nearly 50 years, Alan Dershowitz, who said, and we'll read his actual quote verbatim, that the government or its agents can inject you with anything they want if they are doing it because of a public health emergency. You have no constitutional rights at all. Last night, Tucker Carlson interviewed him. Unfortunately, either Tucker was not well informed, but both he and mainly Dershowitz missed the whole point. And it wasn't about our rights to determine what goes into our body. And Dershowitz said that if this went to the Supreme Court would vote unanimously or maybe 8-1 in favor of the government having the right to do with your body what it chooses to do with no repercussions. It missed the point entirely. So, we've written another article. It's posted today. May I suggest that you really start to share everything we're posting because there's so few quality sources of objective information on alternative and complementary medicine, environmental issues, and government overreach. And there are some good people out there who are writing, but not all that frequently. We're having to catch up, so we're writing as much as 3 articles a week. And starting next week, we're going to give you 30 straight articles on the dangers of vaccines so that you can have a good piece of scholarly material to challenge the authorities. We have to start our challenges now. And today you'll hear the beginning of that, as I'll be doing a special report. It's entitled Fast Tracking a COVID-19 Vaccine, Why We Should Worry, and it's published on the Progressive Radio Network. Then it'll be open time for you to call in and share your thoughts on TalkBack. If you intend to become involved, in what way? If you don't think it's important, explain why. Because right now, it is my guesstimate that if the government said we have a new fast-track vaccine to help prevent COVID infections, 95% of the American population would line up with no questions asked. And if it's a Bill Gates vaccine, you can bet that it's going to go from voluntary to mandatory, and then vaccine cards, travel cards, work permits. I don't think the average person has any concept of what kind of dystopian, totalitarian, fascistic police state we are now in. Not becoming, we are in it right now. So we're going to deal with this. Time permitting, I'll also share insights from John Whitehead, the slippery slope of despotism, paved with lockdowns, raids, and forced vaccinations. But we begin before that with blueberries. Despite scientific advancements in cancer research and treatment, cancer remains one of the 3 leading causes of death worldwide. The extensive use of radiation and steroids and other powerful drugs has caused cancer cells to become resistant, thus complicating treatment for patients. Radiation therapy, a type of conventional cancer treatment, which in and of itself uses high doses of radiation to kill cancer cells and shrink tumors, and it works. But then what happens a year later, 2 years later, when the cancer comes back, but the immune system has been substantially decimated by the therapy itself? They never tell you about what happens the second or third time. By the third time, it's over. You die. However, existing radiation therapies often fail to eradicate the tumor themselves, thus resulting in disease relapse, such as the case for radiation therapies against the carcinoma, the hepatocellular carcinoma, or liver cancer, one of the most common types of cancer around the world. Now, several cancer studies have also long since proven that radiation therapies tend to destroy healthy cells in the body at a substantially high rate over cancer cells. And that doesn't mean because you destroyed the cancer cells, you've necessarily destroyed the most powerful of those cells, the progenitor of the cancer, the stem cells. But they never talk about the harmful side effects. We just see it, bald head, vomiting, emaciation, cachexia. And then along comes the Taipei Medical University and its Academy of Sciences, and they found that the antioxidants in grapes and blueberries can inhibit cancer cell invasion, a phenomena linked to radiation exposure. And for the experiment, the team, you know, treated the stem cells with increasing concentrations of the phytonutrients. And prior to gamma irradiation, the researchers found that the blueberries and grapes suppressed proliferation of cancer stem cells due to irradiation. In fact, the number of pretreated cancer stem cells was down to 0.7% compared to 16.5% in the control group. This suggests that in high doses, grapes and blueberries can eliminate cancer cells completely. So, in addition, the phytochemicals in grapes and blueberries disrupted the formation of tumors and induced apoptosis, or programmed cell death, in the cancer stem cells. All things considered, wouldn't it be reasonable for us to be using more grapes and blueberries in our diet? Absolutely. From McMaster's University, which is in Canada, published in the previous journal Nutrients, they found that potatoes have amino acids that can really help maintain your muscle. That's right. Now, we know that potatoes are part of a healthy plant-based source of protein, and a new study suggests that protein derived from potatoes can be of high quality and help a person develop and maintain muscle mass. That's good. And normally people think of potatoes just as a starch. No, also has amino acids. Now, mind you, the average American consumes animal protein. And right now, there's a whole horrific story. I won't get into it today, where tens of millions of chickens, pigs, and cows are being killed, slaughtered, not for human consumption, but because of they cannot process them. So they just kill them, and killing them in some really bad ways. We'll have someone on to talk about this next week. But why even have to eat anything from an animal when it's not necessary? Some of the greatest athletes, male and female athletes on the planet, are vegans. So it's just a myth that you have to be, you know, an animal eater. In fact, I was thinking about this morning. I was on the track doing my workout, and my mind just rolled back to the 1980s. For about 15 years, the Natural Limbering and Running and Walking Club, we had runners and we had walkers, and we were winning every race in some division everywhere in America. In fact, we'd get a whole car full of us. We'd go out to Long Island. There'd be a race, running race. We'd jump out of the car, do the race. We'd have multiple winners, jump back in the car and drive back to the city, and then do a race. One day we did, in fact, several times we did an early morning race and then a later race in the same day. We would train every Monday evening in my apartment. I had one of those old pre-war apartments, and there'd be about 15 of us lifting weights and running the steps, and it was just wonderful. All of us were vegans. All of us. Now, we're talking about Louise Nottage, without question the greatest senior athlete in world history. Thelma Wilson, Joan Rowland, Sam Skinner, all these Franco and all of us with Frank Gallo, Jeff, Gary. We had a bunch. And we were fast. I haven't seen these people in years. But being a vegan, and you talk about ripped, these people, men and women. We had all the women on in our running and walking group. Whatever race they were in, they'd be a champion. They'd win. Luann Panessi must have won over 150 races, including the World Games, National Championships, State Championships, Local Championships. Catherine Kiggins, one of the greatest natural athletes I've ever seen. Susan Clemens. We had all these people. They were tough. I mean, you go out for a workout, you'd be zipping around the park a six-minute mile and thinking, okay, we're in our 12th mile. We're going to slow down. They just smile. Nope. Pick it up. Keep it up. All vegans. So the next time someone suggests, oh, you're a vegan? Where do you get your protein? Humans, we eat barbecue legs of humans. What an idiot thing to say to someone in today's world. But we got a lot of people out of the loop on knowledge. So now add potatoes to just one more of the things that can give you quality protein. And that's on an anti-animal and a plant-based diet. And they're the healthiest diets in the world. I mean, just read the article in Advances Nutrition. Worldwide, the burden of morbidity and mortality from diet-related chronic disease is increasing. And so they're saying it's because of the American diet and other diets that are highly processed, dead, denatured, instead of vital and living. Eat healthy, clean plants, nuts, seeds, legumes. Also from the French National Center for Scientific Research, and this was given at the European Society of Cardiology, they found that every heart dances to a different tune. What do I mean? Play the same piece of music to two people, and their hearts can respond very differently. That's the conclusion of a novel study presented to the European Society of Cardiology. This pioneering research revealed how music triggers individual effects on the heart, a vital first step in developing personalized music prescriptions for common ailments, much like aromatherapy. Now, we're not all going to like sandalwood or sage. We each have our own unique preferences. We all don't like the same kind of music. We all don't read the same literature. So now they're able to find music that's good for your heart. That's good. Good for them. Congratulations on some real original thinking. And also from Shanghai University of Traditional Chinese Medicine, they found that fatty oils from Chinese medicine have anti-cancer properties. I won't go into this study. It's published in the American Journal of Chinese Medicine. What they're showing is that anti-cancer effects of fatty oils, and these stimulate the immune cells by triggering are triggered by different herbs. It's just a very interesting article, how other cultures around the world can use different oils that can help the body rebalance itself. And a lot of culinary herbs. I once ate in a little tiny, I mean tiny restaurant. There's, I think, four tables in it. Over on, I believe it was 1978. And it was on First Avenue. And a Japanese woman, older Japanese woman, owned it. And the food was really tasty, but she had all these herbs. And she just come look in my little kitchen. So I went into her kitchen, and she had about 100 different herbs, some fresh, some dried. And she said, these herbs we use in Japan on a daily basis in all of our foods, at least the older people do, to keep them healthy. The Chinese have been doing this also, as have people in the Middle East. So spices, herbs like cress, mustard, black cumin, black pepper, fenugreek, clove, cinnamon, and these are extremely medicinal. So something to look at, how different cultures use different herbs and different oils. For example, it's not uncommon when you're in Italy, not necessarily in the cities, but when you're out in the country and you start the meal with an antipasto, or let's say you start with some grilled eggplant and fennel and tomato and olives in the middle, multiple different types of olive, and generally an olive oil is very dark. For a lot of Americans, it's too strong. They like it more filtered, a sweeter taste. But there, no, that's one of the reasons they're healthy. That's the latest on Health and Healing. I'm Gary Nall. We're going to take a break, and when we come back from our break, I'm going to share the latest on why you should all be very, very concerned about them fast-tracking a coronavirus vaccine and then mandating it, because I believe that's exactly where they're going to go with this. And then at the same time they mandate this, what other vaccines will they mandate? And that they have the constitutional power to do that. And why do they have that constitutional power? What can we do? Is there anything we can do? Not at the legal level, I don't believe, at this time. But we're going to be having on Danny Schechter, John Whitehead, constitutional attorneys and scholars. And tomorrow I'm having on Robert Kennedy Jr. We're going to discuss this. But there are things we can do. What would you suggest we do if you were told that all Americans are going to be vaccinated? If they choose not to, they can be arrested and put into internment camps. Or if they find that you're willing to be, you know, voluntarily, they would take those people probably first. What would you do then? Would you say it doesn't matter? What are you putting into me? Why don't you ask the millions of GIs since 1950 in the Korean War through Vietnam and the Iraq War, and especially in the Iraq War, where they were given up to 20 different vaccines and never given any information on what was in them, experimental botulism vaccine, experimental anthrax vaccines, and then began to suffer symptoms, many of them so debilitating. They'd come into my office. A woman came into my office, very, very small, I'm guessing about 4'10", very petite. She'd been in the conflict zone, but before she got the conflict zone, she got these vaccines and her legs swelled up. And I'm talking about swelling up, her calves were the size of basketballs. Her skin had been broken. It was splitting, and she was oozing. It took us 14 months at the Tri-State Healing Center, but we reversed all that. We got her health back. The government never acknowledged to this day that anything was wrong with all the vaccines, and suddenly 70,000 of them, their medical records disappeared. Of course they did. So you want to get an experimental vaccine in your body? Please pay attention, because you'll have no place to hide, and nobody will care about your politics, nobody will care about your religion, nobody will care about your position and who you know. That'll be irrelevant. For all of you who are just joining the program right now, thank you very much. Please remember that I can create an awful lot of material, always vetted by our team of lawyers and scholars, so you could use this in a court of law. But you've got to do something with it. Share it to as many people as possible. And we know people are concerned about this. Maybe the coronavirus had one positive outcome, in that it galvanized us into realizing we don't have a health system, we don't have a care for the public well-being, and look how mismanaged it was in California and in New York, for example, putting all those people with COVID virus into nursing homes. That was a death sentence. Shouldn't the governor and those responsible be held accountable? When there was a ship empty, there was the Javits Center for 3,000 people. You could have put all those patients there and protected those nursing homes. Remember, the people in nursing homes didn't have the COVID virus. It's when you took the COVID virus inside. So anyhow, this has been mismanaged from top to bottom. But share this. The COVID-19 pandemic is now exposing the hidden agendas and motives of the powers that be in government and in the pharmaceutical industry and Wall Street and in the media. Despairingly, opponents of vaccine mandate are largely divided. Many Trump supporters in the so-called anti-vaccine community believed he would be their savior to protect vaccine exemptions and avert compulsory mandates. He didn't. Nevertheless, during his watch, draconian mandate laws to ban religious exemptions for children to attend public schools have been signed by the governors of California and New York. Throughout the COVID-19 pandemic, Trump has waffled wildly, jumping on and off the vaccine bandwagon depending upon his daily whims. Early, he stated that there was no need for a vaccine since the virus would magically disappear and no longer be a threat. It was his gut feeling, and not surprisingly, as always, he was wrong. Yet during a press conference on March 14th, Trump announced the unveiling of his Operation Warp Speed agenda to accelerate development of a COVID-19 vaccine and have it ready this year. Trump is now fully on board with the pro-vaccine agenda. Moreover, he ordered that the military be, quote, mobilized with the pro-vaccination agenda, and at the same time, they were going to get this done by the end of the year, quote, because we have very, very rapidly developed this. His newly appointed Warp Speed advisor is a venture capitalist and a former chairman of GlaxoSmithKline's vaccine division, Moncel Slaoui. Often, in order to understand Trump's strategies, simply follow the money trail, especially if the money trail leads to sealing loyalty to the president. However, his probable immediate motivation is for re-election and to increase the profits of pharmaceutical and investor profiles as repayment for those loyalties. We can therefore reasonably expect, despite what has already been stated, that Trump may nationally mandate a COVID-19 vaccine. There are voices in Trump's camp who favor mandates. One of Trump's leading attorneys is Harvard Law Professor Alan Dershowitz, who recently went on record. Here's what he said on record. You'll hear him also being interviewed by Tucker Carlson in a few moments. Quote, "Let me put it very clearly. You have no constitutional right to endanger the public and spread disease. You have no right not to be vaccinated. You have no right not to wear a mask. You have no right to open up your business. If you refuse to be vaccinated, the state has the power to literally take you to a doctor's office and plunge a needle into your arm," end quote. What might be the downside if a vaccine pushed on the public en masse is discovered to not work or is found unsafe in the long term? Worse, what might be the consequences of a flawed vaccine that becomes mandated and required as policy to attend schools and work, or even to leave your home to shop? We might be faced with an epidemic of vaccine-related illnesses and deaths on a scale that could dwarf the current COVID-19 pandemic. There would be a greater rationale to push forward a fast-track vaccine if the private vaccine manufacturers were held legally and personally liable for vaccine-related injuries and deaths. However, this was laid to rest by the Reagan administration after the passage of the Vaccine Injury Compensation Act in 1986, which freed the pharmaceutical industry from personal injury lawsuits. Consequently, there is no incentive whatsoever for the vaccine industry to perform thorough due diligence, analysis, and reviews, and to adopt gold standard scientific measures to create a safe and effective vaccine. In effect, they have free rein to develop vaccines according to their own rules, and if they're dangerous, if they kill you, you have no way of responding. The courts are on their side. According to German oncologist Klaus Kohlenlein, we may well be in the era of virus mania. The prevailing medical establishment has become dominated by a rapidly expanding private industry obsessed with viruses and the invention of pandemics for enormous profit. This obsession was to hijack not only medical practice and legislators who are determined to mandate vaccination, but has also infiltrated the entire mainstream media. This is despite consensual confirmatory evidence that some of these viruses may not be dangerous enough to warrant a vaccine, nor demand mass screening to monitor potential infections. For example, University of Toronto Professor Emeritus of Pathology, Dr. Etienne de Harvin, would have us ask, do molecular markers for retroviruses truly confirm the presence of a virus? Or is this a human invention that substitutes the absence of identifiable viral proteins and particles? Embedded in all of the confusion over COVID-19 and the heated debates and uncertainty over life returning to normal, the mainstream chorus chants that stability will only resume after a vaccine is launched on the public. At this moment, there's a book. It's an older book, published in 2007. It's called Virus Mania, Avian Flu, Cervical Cancer, SARS, BSE, Hepatitis C, AIDS, Polio, and it's essential reading to expose the life-threatening failures in modern medicine's scientific efforts to tackle viral threats. And what Professor Conlein outlines is being repeated again with COVID-19. The need for a vaccine in order for society and the economy to return to normal was clearly stated by Trump's Federal Reserve Chairman, Jerome Powell. Quote, for the economy to fully recover, that may have to wait the arrival of a vaccine, unquote. Unfortunately, besides the White House and the nation being impatient and placing high hopes in a vaccine, we are all witnessing the careless zeal to cut regulatory corners. And this atmosphere could potentially end in a serious medical disaster on the not-too-distant horizon. Virus mania is morphing into vaccine mania. That vaccine mania has become a reality is evidenced in the 133 different vaccines currently in development worldwide targeting against COVID-19. That's according to the Milken Institute. Many challenges must be recognized and surmounted before an effective COVID-19 vaccine can be deemed safe. The virus has already been shown to mutate rapidly despite that its RNA is stable. Mutations, of course, naturally occur when a virus changes hosts, especially after jumping species. Moreover, RNA viruses mutate more readily than larger DNA viruses like herpes or human papillomavirus or smallpox. University of Cambridge in the Great Britain has identified three separate mutations since the Wuhan outbreak. Last month, Los Alamos National Laboratory reported a recent mutation that is more contagious and transmissible than the original Wuhan strain. So tell me again exactly how you're going to create a vaccine for a virus that mutates. That's why we don't have a cold vaccine, and that's why the flu vaccine is, well, it's one of the dumbest scientific efforts in history. They mass produce these, they have very low efficacy rates, but they have no science to back up their claims of what is actually prevented because they do not take into account what a person might have done on their own in addition to getting the flu vaccine to help them. If a person is homebound with a couple chronic illnesses in Minnesota in the winter, and another person the same age is in Miami, out in the sun, power walking on the beach, having lots of fresh fruits and vegetables on a healthy plant-based diet, taking vitamin C, D, E, zinc. Now, they're both going to be considered the same. They both got flu vaccine. They both don't get the virus. They don't come down with the flu. Are you going to say that it was the flu vaccine that prevented this? You can't. There's too many issues involved, and yet that's the simplicity, the dumb and dumber science of vaccinology. And by the way, another strain was identified in India. The South China Morning Post reported that this Indian strain is being viewed as more virulent for the development of severe acute respiratory syndrome. The researchers from National Tsinghua University in Taiwan and Murdoch University in Australia warned that it, quote, means current vaccine development against SARS-CoV-2 is at risk of becoming futile, end quote. The problem with mutations, similar to the challenges to create a universal flu vaccine, is whether or not any COVID-19 vaccine would generate sufficient immunity to combat further mutant strains and whether this is a crossover of multiple strain immunity. Furthermore, some reports indicate that natural COVID immunity may wane quickly. This is an additional caution about any promises that a fast-track and poorly evaluated vaccine, which will bypass a rigorous regulatory review, will provide much, if any, long-term immunity. In a preliminary study, Columbia University researchers identified people who were reinfected with the same coronavirus strain within a single year. 12 individuals tested positive 2 or 3 times for the same strain within 18 months. Hence, the person from Ireland who said once you have the virus, you're immune for life, is simply wrong. She was sharing her opinion, but not scientific facts. And yet she has an outstanding reputation as a scientist. Also, what we have to look at is similar findings were noted in South Korea. The Columbia scientist's conclusion is that coronavirus, quote, immunity seems to wane quickly, end quote. Dr. Matthew Freeman at the University of Maryland is an expert in coronaviruses. He states that, quote, we get coronaviruses every winter, even though we're seroconverted. We really don't understand whether it is a change in the virus over time, such as mutations or antibodies that don't protect from infection, end quote. The consequences are that proposals for issuing immunity certificates or passports or some form of card would be utterly futile, worthless, garbage science, of no value. An extraordinary waste of funding that would accomplish little. Since 2003, efforts have been made to develop coronavirus vaccines following the first SARS outbreak in China. Now, mind you, that's 17 and a half years ago. All of these efforts failed, every single one, either because of a lack of funding or because of observable serious adverse effects that necessitated the project be ceased. To our knowledge, none of these efforts reach human trials because of serious adverse effects in animal trials. But what if they bypass animal trials? What if everything is done so superficially, like they did with AZT? Their fast-tracking of AZT was a disaster. I will never forget the day when Lynn Gannett, and if you're listening, Lynn, please contact our office at prnstudio@gmail.com. We'd like to have you on to talk about your experience. You know, I'd never seen her before, didn't know who she was. She has this tall stack of documents. And I was down on 72nd Street at the Tri-State Healing Center. And she said, I'm one of the supervisors of the ACT drug trials up at the universities, Rochester and Syracuse, et cetera. And she said it is a completely fraudulent study. And she told me about how people had died and been excluded. Hey, if someone dies taking up a drug, they're included. You don't exclude them, but all kinds of illnesses, they got excluded. Then she found that people were bunching their tablets together. If it tasted sweet, then it was the placebo with milk sugar. Nobody wanted the placebo. They all thought that AZT would work. So they started pulling AZT. Anyhow, she had all the documents bringing all this to the heads of the FDA overseeing the study. It didn't matter. The fix was in, the politics was there, and so it passed fast track. It is my estimation that hundreds of thousands of HIV-positive but otherwise healthy gay men died because of taking AZT. More on that when John Lawrenson joins us on an upcoming program, and Charles Ortley, to talk about the really bad experience of AZT. And who was one of the people behind that? Anthony Fauci. And who's behind the fast-tracking of this one? Anthony Fauci. And which organization? The National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease back then. And which one today? The National Institutes of Allergy and Infectious Disease. So you see, we've had the same mindset then, and we have it again today. That's why I'm very concerned. Now we're witnessing a company called Moderna, bypassing animal studies with its new COVID vaccine and commencing with human trials. This should never be allowed. Never be allowed. That's a big red flag. The company has already reported that its experimental vaccine showed signs of being, quote, safe and provoked a strong immune response in its first phase clinical trial. The vaccine was administered to a very small number of human participants, 45. We're a country of 330 million people, and you're testing what may be the most dangerous, irresponsible vaccine in world history, mandated on 45 people? Since when did that become legitimate to determine safety and to measure the levels of volunteers' immune response? Just over half the participants had recognizable antibodies, but these were, quote, binding antibodies. What is critical for protection is neutralizing antibodies. And on this account, only 4 out of 45 participants were actually analyzed. 4 out of 4. So we got 4 people out of 45 that were analyzed to show promising neutralizing antibody results. Nor did Moderna report any T-cell activity. Why is that important? Because it's essential for fighting viruses. In other words, Moderna's premature reports, in my opinion, are grossly negligible for guaranteeing an effective and safe COVID-19 vaccine. But it doesn't matter what the science shows. It's where the money and political power is. We should remember this is only a first phase trial. The vaccine has a little bit ways to go before it's ruled effective. But who's going to rule it effective? The FDA is notoriously corrupt. They're utterly and vilely corrupt. I would trust nothing that the CDC advisory panels, because they're loaded, what they say, because they're loaded with pro-vaccine industry, pharmaceutical industry shills who sit on their boards and pass things, including people who have had their own vaccines up for review, and they didn't even recuse themselves. Well, the vaccine has a lot of attention now. Quote, if you look at vaccine development, so states Dr. Daniel Salmon, director of Johns Hopkins Institute for Vaccine Safety, quote, there are lots of vaccines that look good out of phase one that don't turn out to be good products, end quote. Professor Michael Chofshadovsky, a professor emeritus at the University of Ottawa, has documented National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease Dr. Anthony Fauci's support of Moderna's vaccine. And according to Robert Kennedy Jr., who we'll hear from tomorrow, FACO waived the needs for the company to test the vaccine in ferrets and primates and instead proceeded directly into larger human trials. Both Moderna and its German competitor, CureVac, COVID-19 vaccine rely on RNA technology, which carries strands of mRNA that encode COVID-19-specific proteins intended to stimulate the immune system to produce antibodies. Bill Gates says he is, quote, particularly excited by two new approaches that some candidates are taking, end quote. RNA and DNA vaccines, yes. He's sponsoring 7 different vaccine companies now. But modern medicine has no practical experience with such vaccines being given to entire populations. Therefore, there is absolutely zero history to monitor potential long-term risks, such as whether an genetically engineered code of a viral antigen will recombine adversely with the body's own DNA and trigger other life-threatening injuries that we could be aware of. Despite the hype over Moderna's apparent success and a huge 39% rise in its stock price, a recent article in Nature warns us not to pop the champagne cork yet. Moderna's data remains unpublished, and many scientists worry the results may be murky. It is worrisome that the company would make such an announcement before any data is made available for independent review. Seemingly, this was solely for financial reasons. Moderna's premature claims were rewarded with a $1.3 million stock offering to bankroll its vaccine. Trump is also throwing his weight behind Moderna's vaccine. It is manufactured in the United States, funded by the government, and warp-speeded advisor Slowey sits on the board of the Lonza Group, by the government and the Warp Speed Advisor that collaborated with Moderna. That's, in my opinion, that should be examined for conflict of interest. Now, one caveat is that Moderna has never brought a vaccine nor any therapeutic product to the market and is therefore largely inexperienced. There is also no public release of consent forms that the trial participants are required to sign and no indication of how much volunteers were paid. Are they being compensated with inordinate amounts beyond the industry standards to accept high risk? None of this information has been provided. The Nature article also quotes Baylor University vaccine scientist and coronavirus expert Dr. Peter Hodes' response to Moderna's announcement. Quote, "I'm not convinced that this is really a positive result." He says, quote, "Most people who have recovered from Corona 19 without hospitalization did not produce high levels of neutralizing antibodies, which block the virus from infecting cells. Moderna's measured these potent antibodies in 8 participants and found their levels to be similar to those of recovered patients," end quote. The most promising vaccine, Hodes believes, is being developed by Sinovac Biotech in China, but it requires 3 separate inoculations. Sinovac's vaccine, after being administered to rhesus monkeys, showed no presence of the virus found in the throats, lungs, or rectums of the primates. Another vaccine being developed at Oxford University protected monkeys, by the way, only 6 in the trial, 6, from pneumonia, but the primates' nasal passages contained as much of the virus as those unvaccinated. In other words, all vaccinated monkeys became infected. In addition, the antibody titers were extremely low, which suggests the animals may not be fully protected. Nevertheless, Oxford is interpreting these weak, pathetic results as a success and will also push forward with recruiting participants for a large human trial. This sets a very disturbing precedent that will likely be imitated by other vaccine companies either now or during a future infectious pandemic. Still, other vaccines in development are entirely experimental and have no predecessor on the market. Norvax has created a recombinant nanoparticle vaccine, an artificially engineered fake replica of the actual virus. Since there is no vaccine on the current CDC schedule utilizing this technology, we have no idea of any of its long-term safety. So what do earlier efforts at developing a coronavirus tell us? Well, before you jump on the headlines of the New York Times, the pro-vaccine industry publication and propaganda sheet of record, understand what a failure it's been in the past. In 2012, a vaccine being developed by the University of Texas at Galveston and Baylor University observed pulmonary immunopathology in an animal study with mice. The researcher proposed the vaccine pathology may be attributed to an adverse cytokine response, an observation a large number of physicians and researchers may have made with persons severely affected with COVID-19. A later vaccine effort in 2016 by the same institutions targeted the MERS coronavirus strain and observed lung immunopathology similar to infection with the wild virus. So the vaccine was no different than the wild virus. A year earlier, another vaccine effort led by the University of North Carolina's Vaccine Institute noted an increase in the eosinophilic pro-inflammatory pulmonary responses in a mouse model. By the way, eosinophils are a type of white blood cell that are associated with infections and allergies and cancers. However, an abnormal increase in eosinophils, a condition called an eosinophilia, can result in nasal allergies and nasal and even cancer. This raises the question whether the North Carolina vaccine could have potentially contributed to lung cancer. The vaccine was also shown to provide poor protection from infection both in the adjuvant and non-adjuvant vaccines. A later 2018 SARS vaccine trial with rhesus macaques conducted at Wuhan University led to antibody-dependent vaccine-induced infections. The project was supposedly discontinued. Another SARS vaccine trial with ferrets led by researchers at the University of Manitoba, observed a promising neutralizing antibody response. However, there was severe inflammatory responses observed in the animals' livers. The scientists concluded that the vaccine was associated with an enhanced hepatitis. Well, that's not good. Could you imagine a mass vaccine and people end up with hepatitis? That vaccine project seems also to have been shelved. Japanese scientists in 2008 developed a SARS vaccine that utilized a recombinant vaccine virus that expressed the SARS spike protein. Immunized mice exhibited increased infiltration of eosinophils in the lungs, a thickening of the alveolar epithelium, an uptake in cytokines contributing to abnormal inflammatory storms in the body, and aggravated severe pneumonia. Clearly, the past history to develop a coronavirus vaccine is not encouraging. Jennifer Sun, a molecular biologist at Princeton, warns that due to past coronavirus vaccine failures, the COVID-19 signatures need to be fully evaluated before any human trials commence in order, quote, to prevent organ damage upon viral challenge. Baylor University, which has attempted to develop a vaccine, knows the problems all too well. According to Dr. Robert Atmar at Baylor's Department of Molecular Virology, coronaviruses, quote, are notoriously difficult when it comes to vaccine development. The concern is that if these vaccines were used in people, they could end up causing harm, end quote. Other scientists have issued warnings against hastily approving a vaccine without proper large long-term clinical trials and scrupulous evaluation. For example, Dr. Paul Offit at the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, one of the nation's most vocal advocates for compulsory vaccination, has criticized the shortened vaccine timelines being stated. In a Philadelphia Inquirer interview, Offit cautioned for the need, quote, extensive animal model testing, end quote, to be certain the vaccine, quote, is safe in animals. This process, Offit says, quote, takes a lot of time, typically years. If you're going to be testing this in otherwise healthy people who are very, very unlikely to die from this infection, you better make sure it's safe. So you want those regulations in place. The point being, we're not very good at assessing risk, end quote. Trump is pushing to have a vaccine ready by the end of this year. Offit and others argue 2 years is more realistic. And the global analytics firm Clarivate estimates that a vaccine, quote, will require at least 5 years to complete the development process through full regulatory approval, end quote. The good news is that the firm predicts that Moderna's mRNA vaccine has a 5% probability of success. The bad news is that the government and federal health agencies will likely ram the first promising vaccine through the regulatory channels without having been properly evaluated for its efficacy and safety. So without serious critical thought, the demand for a vaccine now outweighs the risks, and there is the potential for many risks that remain completely unknown, which is the same for any vaccine. Trump said it will be available, quote, in a fairly quick manner, end quote. In an interview with philosophy professor Nicholas Evans at the University of Massachusetts, he raised concerns over the lack of proper animal model vaccine trials before administering it to humans. Unfortunately, there are no U.S. laws that require animal trials. Most people are not aware of that. Consequently, the pharmaceutical companies are taking advantage of this derelict oversight in their race to be the first to get a vaccine approved and distributed. Evans also worries, quote, the shredding of regulations and regulatory norms as part of their federal health agency's response to this outbreak, and this is a very dangerous proposition, end quote. Rarely do politicians and increasingly more and more scientists make efforts to learn the lessons history offers. Past efforts to develop a coronavirus vaccine have failed, and the adverse effects observed in these efforts are clear indicators for why fast-tracking a COVID-19 vaccine would be frightfully irresponsible. But now this is all being ignored within the Trump White House, the CDC, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, and across most of the medical establishment, particularly the private vaccine makers. In addition, the media continues to fuel our vaccine mania, priming the public to willingly surrender their bodies to the syringe under the pretext of being protected from future COVID outbreaks. Perhaps the most disturbing problem our nation faces is the failure of our leading health agencies, the CDC, the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, the World Health Organization, to acknowledge the overwhelming evidence that no vaccine ever developed is truly safe and effective for everyone. Are there any scientific gold standard studies, double-blind, randomized, controlled studies using actual inert placebo conducted for any vaccine currently on the market? No. Have meticulous independent studies been performed to compare the quality of health between vaccinated and non-vaccinated participants? Unfortunately, there aren't any, and the CDC was forced to acknowledge this during a congressional subcommittee hearing on autism. All of the media's vaccine propaganda is stacked with pro-industry scientists who have something to gain. They are always presented as the experts. On the other hand, independent scientists, as well as board-certified physicians and pediatricians and parents who question the official vaccine dogma, are attacked by federal officials and the mainstream media as alarmists, anti-vaxxers, and even threats to society if they speak out. Yes, several years ago, the World Health Organization listed vaccine opponents among the 10 leading threats to global health. But no one considers it the many millions of people who either themselves or their children received a vaccine and experienced serious adverse effects were at one time all pro-vaccination. It was for that very reason they submitted themselves to be vaccinated in the first place. Now, with the dramatic rise in vaccine injuries and deaths and autism, as more shots are added to the nation's vaccine schedule, we still await congressional hearings at the federal and state levels that invite independent scientists, toxicologists, immunologists to explain the actual peer-reviewed literature that would have us conclude there's no such thing as either a safer vaccine or a vaccine that creates neutralizing antibodies for any given person. In other words, every vaccine may or may not be effective, and there is no proof they protect everyone. There is also the utterly absurd notion that whenever someone receives a vaccine and does not come down with the disease, 100% of the credit is given to the vaccine's efficacy. And where are the real advocates who are speaking on behalf of the victims from vaccine injuries? Certainly not the pharmaceutical industry that profits immensely without any liability for damages, nor are advocates to be found in federal and state health agencies, in most of the medical community, nor across the spectrum of the media. Rather, those who refuse to take unsafe vaccines are blamed for spreading fear, uncertainty, conspiracies, and even infectious disease. But now those who have been injured or their loved ones are speaking out in greater unison. This is becoming increasingly uncomfortable for those who have profited for years from their pain and suffering. Please go to prn.fm. There are two things I want you to share today. Share this with everyone you know, this article. Plus, there is a film, a multi-award-winning documentary called, well, there's actually two. Deadly Deception is the one we have up there now. We're going to put another silent epidemic up later. But Deadly Deception, share it, because it shows you the truth about how all vaccines are created, the lying, the conniving, the death, the harm, the Gardasil vaccine in particular, the MMR vaccine, once the DPT vaccine, the hepatitis B for children, all of these are exposed. The politicians, you can buy them. And in California, you can buy all the politicians for about the price of a McDonald's. It's pathetic. So let's do something now before it's too late. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening and have a nice day.